Welcome back to Podcast Recovery, everyone. We are your hosts, David O.
And Carly R.
And as always, behind the curtain, the wizard Eric.
Yep, that's me. I'm the wizard.
And today we're joined by our very special guest, Josh. How are you doing today, man?
I'm good. How are you guys doing?
Good. Well, Happy New Year, everybody.
Happy New Year.
This is our first 2024 podcast.
Bringing in the new year fresh.
New Year strong. Coming in strong. Where are you from?
Where am I from? I was born in Baltimore, actually. 1984. So
you're older than me.
You're the oldest person in this room.
I am the oldest person.
I didn't know you were older than me.
Oldest in the room.
Good to know. Yeah.
Well, you have such a youthful face.
Easy life. Had an easy life.
You'll be 40 this year.
I do turn 40 in a couple of months.
It's right around. I'm sorry. Way to be a dick, Eric. Total dick.
Yeah. I was like, wait, it's 2024. Oh man, that's
you hit him with the 4-0.
So,
born in Baltimore, but only stayed there for a little bit, then moved to Crownsville, actually, and did most of my younger years in Crownsville, and then Arnold, so,
When were you first introduced to recovery?
So, I didn't get introduced to it. I was aware. It was on the peripheries, right, growing up. I definitely was like, oh, there's that one girl I know who's like got problems and she goes to these things sometimes and what's NA? I don't even know. Like, let's get fucked up. definitely for me getting introduced to NA was like suggestions. Like I had hit a pretty hard bottom and part of my story for sure is having this like know-it-all gene or whatever you want to call it, thinking I know better.
Yep.
And I don't know if anyone can relate to that.
I can.
But what I found is that that's a real isolator, right? Mm-hmm. If I know better, then I don't need anyone else. Then I can be alone and then I can use drugs by myself and I'm good to go.
Yep.
So that isolated me for a long time thinking that I knew what was best. And so it wasn't until I hit my last bottom and I got clean this last time where I really got like introduced to Narcotics Anonymous.
And that brings me to my last question. How long have you been clean?
How long have I been clean? I just celebrated 6 years, December 1st last year. So fantastic. 6 years clean.
All right. Well, the floor is yours. Take it away, buddy.
Sure. This is an interesting one, telling your story. I actually do a step meeting once or twice a week with a bunch of guys, and our homework assignment this week is to do the 15, the 3, and the 1. And so this is like a new concept to me, 6 years in recovery, where tell your story in 15 minutes,
okay,
in 3 minutes, and 1 minute. So like, how can you like boil it down to like, what's the most important parts of the story? What is the stuff that really matters? So this is a good opportunity.
Okay, once you're done talking, before we get to questions, we're going to all do our story in 1 minute.
1 minute.
No, I'm good.
Oh, I think I can do it.
I can do it.
It takes a little bit of practice, right? Because you're like, what are the really important points that need to be expressed in 60 seconds?
Chapter headings.
Yeah. So where to start, right? I guess, start where it began in Crownsville, right? Or Baltimore. You know, I don't remember Baltimore at all. Was born in Baltimore General. I would say middle child, all boys, upper middle class, right?
Yeah.
Dad worked for the government, had his PhD and was getting his PhD while he was raising us. So he was either working or in school the whole time. Mm-hmm. So it was like kind of a single Jewish mom, a little bit of anxiety issues and like very controlling because she was scared, right? She was an only child of a Holocaust escapee, right?
Whoa.
So
are both your parents Jewish?
No, just my mom's
okay.
side. So I'm a real fan of Gabor Mate. I am an addiction counselor too. I have a degree and a license. But so that means I've like researched people like Gabor Mate who talk like about intergenerational trauma. Mm-hmm. And these are the kind of things that help me put my story into perspective. So when, because I used to have a lot of resentments towards my parents because of their inability to be exactly what I wanted and what I needed, right?
Yeah.
Like unreasonable expectations for people. And so he helped me to see this like intergenerational trauma thing. So immigrants coming to a new country, you know, escaping the Holocaust. And it's like, and then he had, like, my grandpa was like a Jewish doctor, and he had his only daughter who would just like, we call them Japs. If you don't know what a Jap is, Jewish American princess. Mm-hmm. It was like his
entire. Do you not know that?
Well, I just thought a Jap was a Japanese person. Like, Jesus. You know, when like people, I didn't realize there was different connotations.
Yeah. Jewish American princess. Yeah.
All right.
What's the thing?
So, she grew up very sheltered, right? It was like she was daddy's little girl. She kind of got everything she wanted. She went to Goucher, all girls private college, you know, back in the day.
I lived across from Goucher.
Yeah. So, and the reason she went there is because grandpa was like, you can only go this many miles away from me. And Baltimore was the farthest place away from her dad. And so she's like, I'm out of here, right?
Yeah.
That's as far as he'll let me go. That's where I'm going. And so that's just to set the scene, right? Mm-hmm. I come from parents who were...
I have a question real quick, sure. though. So, like, your mom, you're saying she's, like, she was very overprotected as a kid, and then she went to, like, Goucher, which is, like, a super liberal arts, like, you know. Like, I used to party at Goucher because I went to Towson. Like,
okay.
You know, they're a little bit more...
snooty.
It's a liberal arts school, you know, like for sure. They're a little bit more free.
Oh, yeah. And it's also the times, right? Because you went to Goucher when it wasn't an all girls school.
No, it was not an all girls school. They had a lacrosse program.
Yeah. So Goucher, when my mom went there, was this like all girls school.
Oh, wow.
So totally
different. Yeah, totally different
times.
Yeah, Del the Funky Homo Sapien played there when I was
exactly. I went there. Yeah. So that kind of sets the stage, right?
Dave just hates me. Right?
You're so baffling, Eric.
And you know, that just sets the stage from what I was born into, right? Two parents who had higher education degrees in public health and. My dad worked in the field, worked for the public health service for 30 years, PhD. So parents were very much into public health. Mom was my kinder or preschool teacher, which is a terrible idea. If you have a kid, don't be your kid's preschool teacher.
No.
Because I go to preschool and I'm like, oh, this is my mom. I get to have all of her attention. And then it's like, no, she has to like split it between you and 20 other kids.
Yeah.
So I get to go sit in the hallway because I'm being too needy, you know? And like these are the things that I can talk about now that like we're just like forget about it, right? Like you're a kid, like who cares about your childhood? Let's get fucked up. Mm-hmm. So coming from that, it was definitely an interesting childhood, right? Because I was provided for. I always had a roof over my head. You know, I would even call it spoiled to a certain extent, except I knew kids who were more spoiled, so I never wanted to be called spoiled because it was like, well, that kid's got more than me. Mm-hmm. But it's like, dude, like when you were in high school, like when you got your license, you got a brand new Jeep Wrangler. It's like they weren't giving me money.
But he got a BMW.
Yeah. Oh. Or there was the one guy who had like a Mach 1 GT4, you know, that came
to my high school. I just got a Saturn. Get it.
Mm-hmm. Going to private school for
boo fuckity who. I got an 85 Mercedes turbo diesel. Go fuck yourself.
Yeah,
it cost $500.
Your Mercedes is probably still running though.
It would be if my sister didn't crash it.
Yeah. So
bitch.
Anyway. So yeah, definitely came from a little bit of privilege, right? Went to private school until 7th grade. Mm-hmm. And that was actually like a really rough transition.
Yeah.
Going from private school to public school. I guess my parents were trying to save a little bit of money. It's something that they, in retrospect, they're like, we kind of regret it because it was such a hard transition.
Well, it fucks you. You're middle of middle school and like all your friends you grew up with are cut. Right?
Yeah. Well, it was a little bit worse than that, because I went from like a private Jewish school till fifth grade to a private like Indian Creek, which is, I don't know if you know about Indian Creek, that's a private school in Crownsville here. And
No, I'm a poor.
Yeah, you're a poor.
I just know about the Baltimore and Howard County private schools, so I don't really know much about Anne Arundel.
So that's like Crownsville area. Mm. Very nice.
Is it like Gilman or is it like McDonough?
It's like smaller than Spalding.
Okay.
Like Spalding Light.
Okay.
Like not really sports teams. Like they had enough kids to like do academics and stuff, but not really enough kids to like have sports teams that were any good. Mm-hmm. They did have
your class team.
What's that?
How big was like a class?
So like 5 to 10 people.
Holy shit.
So small classes. You know.
5 to 10? Mm-hmm. I think ours was like...
No, I think he means classroom, like your whole grade.
No.
Was your whole grade class. Like 5 to 10?
Oh, you mean my whole grade?
No, just your classroom.
Yeah, it would be in class with a teacher and like 5 to 10 other kids.
That's crazy, dude. Yeah. Like, we had like 30.
Yeah.
But like, yeah, no, I mean, and that's all switched in 7th grade, right?
And then nigger and now in a 30.
So going from class. One private school with the kids I grew up with, and then they all go to like Beth Tefila, which is like a Jewish, you know.
I've heard of that.
And I'm like, I want to go there because I just want to be with my friends. And then I go to Indian Creek. And then it's like a new bunch of kids. And you're dealing with like getting picked on. And my brother was already going there. And he was already dealing with getting picked on like pretty savagely. And like the kids on the bus. And I remember this as a little kid. There were songs. They used to make up songs about my older brother.
What?
And like sing them on the bus. And it was like, and that kind of like, in retrospect.
Oh, shit.
Yeah, in retrospect, it's like like me and my older brother never had the best relationship just because we're like totally different personalities. But it was like, oh, I can't be around that guy or else I'm going to get like.
So was he a loser?
Like, no, he was.
Jesus.
I'm asking in like honest, like, and you know what I mean?
So like, he's like 6 foot. He's a
Freaks and Geeks type situation.
No. He's like 6'3". Firefighter joined the military.
Did that influence his decision?
Yes, like, you know? I think so, but you have to ask him that. You know, I think he was just kind of slow, right, and kind of angry, and because he was kind of had some educational
learning disability or something.
And he went to private school for kids with learning disabilities, you know, growing up. Mm-hmm. And look, I mean, it's funny because my parents, if they were betting, they would have said I was going to be the first one to have a college degree. And my older brother was, you know, we'll see. If he gets through high school, we're doing good. And it was like he was the first one to get a college degree.
Yeah.
So then that transition, and it's like kind of like puts like a rift between me and my brother because it's like I can't be hang out with him or else all the other kids are gonna pick on me.
Yeah.
And then going straight into public school, which is like if you're a kid from private school going to public school, it's tough. It's really, really tough. You move and then you're around a bunch of new people you don't know. All you want to do is fit in and you don't have any friends. Mm-hmm. And
that's hard.
Yeah, it was really hard. But yeah, I was kind of a social butterfly, so I was good at like the casual stuff. And so I could make I was get go along to get along type of guy. And so it wasn't terrible, but it was like I was willing to do whatever it took to have friends, cuz like I saw what my brother went through and I'm like, I'm not doing that. And it didn't even really work, right? And that's actually kind of like this pivotal time in my life is like right around that 7th grade, because I moved to a new neighborhood. And this is where things get like, this is like where the first big thing that like, you know, when we work our 4th and 5th step, we're supposed to be vigorously honest. This was like one of the first things that was like, I'll never tell anyone. And it's like, this is where this happened, which was like, trying to fit into a new neighborhood, new kids, and one of the families that lived in this neighborhood was infamous for all the wrong reasons. And so the old, there was two brothers.
My neighborhood?
The whole family? Is it the whole family?
Well, yes, so the, my fucking
your family.
So the two brothers, one of them was like the neighborhood babysitter, and he got accused by a bunch of like kids and family members of like, you know.
Yep. We know the accusation.
Yeah. Yes. A lot of accusations were thrown this guy's way. Enough so that he had like, he wasn't allowed to be around kids.
Good.
Yeah. But these were the two people that like we were trying to like be friends with, right? Like his little brother was like the kid who would like, all right, this is my first sleepover, come over to my house. And it's like, this is the little brother that comes over to my house. And it's like learning about sex and sexuality because you're in puberty at that age from like someone who has all the wrong answers and yep. is like, oh shit, I'm just gonna learn all the wrong answers. And
Did you guys watch like porn? Like, what's the
No, we learned by watching American Pie. Yeah. That was our generation, dude.
Yeah, what? Pretty much.
You didn't watch porn? Like, you didn't?
No, 100% I watched porn. It was on VHS, dude.
But you know, just a bunch of boys. I mean, this is probably more of a common thing than you'll hear. Like a bunch of boys experimenting, right? And you know, not in the and. Look, I was the youngest there. My older brother was there, but he was like, this feels weird. Guys, I'm going to bed upstairs. Like, and he just left, right? And so it's like me, and like I definitely had like, that left an impression on me like, oh, I'm being abandoned, right? But really at the end of the day, it was like, you know, I just wanted, I don't know, I was a horny kid. I was like, what's going on here, you know? And
you wanted to be a part of too.
Probably, yeah, and I wanted to be a part of. And so yeah, that was like this first experience of like coming into puberty and learning about sexuality from like kids who fucking didn't know what the fuck they were talking about.
Idiots.
Yeah, idiots. Mm-hmm. And I mean, look, I'm not going to go into details, but it was enough that I was like, oh, well, I'll just never talk. That felt weird. I'll never talk about that again. And then it's just like moving on. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so that was like this first thing that we bury. Right.
Mm-hmm.
Did
everyone bury it out of curiosity?
So it was three of us. Everyone else in the neighborhood moved away. Right.
What?
Yeah.
What?
Like the other two kids just moved. Well, one, the family with the older brother, like they were like, we got to get out of town.
They got to dip. Yeah. They have to dip. Yeah.
It's like they have to leave. And then the other family was like, the other kid just left, you know, because it was kind of like, the most important part of this left an impression on me of like,
right? Yeah.
Sex is about like taking advantage of and being taken advantage of. Cause I definitely felt like I was taken advantage of. Like, cause it wasn't like I did anything against my will, but it was like, I felt like I was being
but
like,
you didn't know what you're doing.
And I felt like, and it's not like I was conscious of this, right?
Yeah.
None of this was conscious. This was all like, oh, like it's about like getting what you want. Like,
yeah.
Like that's what sex is, getting what you want. Because that's, you know, and talking people into it. So,
Jesus.
And manipulating.
Yeah, because that's what happened to me. And talking and manipulating people to get what I want, because that's what they did to me.
This wasn't on an island somewhere, was it?
No.
No.
Just and I mean,
kidding.
Just luckily kidding. For me, I mean, look, it definitely like left a scar that like showed up in relationships in my life. Mm-hmm. But yeah, it was definitely a pivotal moment. And I think that's one of the things that kind of that and like emotionally unavailable parents who were not really present, mm-hmm. like kind of let this was like the magic sauce that got thrown into the cauldron that kind of led to someone who.
Yeah.
Was 17, feeling really lonely and alone, and was like, oh, let's like smoke weed and like starting to like, oh man, I feel like I'm just laughing. Feels good. I have friends now. Like,
yes.
And it's just like, this is what I've been missing, right? This is what I need.
Did you get high the first time you smoked?
So the first time I smoked, no, I didn't actually.
I did.
You that's because you smoked cigarettes beforehand. Did you smoke cigarettes?
No.
Yeah, so okay. I didn't know how to inhale either.
Okay.
It's totally fine. You knew how to inhale.
Yeah, no, I did not know how to inhale.
Balls,
yeah.
What can I say?
And it was like a gravity bong too, right?
Oh,
yes.
Oh, man.
But it's like, oh, I just didn't know how to inhale.
It's okay. Like, that's like, I think that's like 75 to 80% of kids. They don't know how to inhale, and they're just pretending they get high the first couple times.
Dude, and that's the
interesting thing? That's a placebo too. I think though.
Yeah,
right?
No, but isn't that the interesting thing? Because I definitely remembered pretending like I was high afterwards.
Like, yeah, oh, man, I'm so high.
I got so fucked up.
Remember that time?
Did you get high first time?
I don't remember.
Okay. You don't remember. And so, look, that all, like, just paved the way for what was to come, which was looking for something outside of myself to make me feel good about myself.
Mm-hmm.
And that was kind of a theme. Also, there was a theme of, like, I was always kind of looking for escapism as a kid. Even before all that happened, I was really into fantasy novels. Like, ooh. I could spend all night reading. Mm-hmm. Like, no sleep. Mm-hmm. Just, like, 12 hours. I couldn't put the book down, right, until it was finished. And then I'm like, when's the next book come out, you know? Mm-hmm. So there was definitely, like, this escapism thing going on with reality. And, you know, some people look at that as, like, the disease of addiction, like, an early sign of it. And my parents would always say, dude, you have an addictive personality. And I'm like, no, I don't. I just do what I want. Like,
I do what I want.
And so, yeah, and that is an addictive personality, because when you want to do drugs, that's what you do. And it's funny, because when I started doing drugs, it helped with my anxiety so much that, like, I actually started doing better in school.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Like, my grades went up. I was able to, like, do homework. It wasn't just, like, go home, like, play video games and ignore life. It was like, oh, other people are doing homework. I got to do homework too.
Did you like doing homework when you were high?
On Adderall. Yeah, later on.
I loved homework in school.
No, I just liked.
I was high all through college. Yeah. It was great.
Yeah.
No shit.
But so.
Shocking.
So, like, I definitely can relate to stuff that Gabor Mate says, that the drugs weren't the problem, it was a solution to a problem.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah. And then that solution just no longer works at some point.
Yeah.
So it definitely helped me. Like weed helped me so much. And I thought, like, this is the best thing ever. I'll do this till the day I die. Like, I'm going to promote it. I'm going to all about it. Wanted to sell it. Like, started selling it. It, like, got me to a place where I was kind of a smart kid, tested pretty high. Managed to get into a pretty decent engineering school out of high school, barely, right? Like, I was in the AP classes, but I was always, like, the C student in the AP classes. So it's because I never did homework, right? I would always, like, get A's on the test, but I would just never hand in any homework. So I would always kind of a C student. But, yeah, weed helped me to, like...
I call that succeeding.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it got me into Drexel, and that was kind of like...
Good job, dude.
Hell yeah.
And that got me to, like, my next stage of life, where this is where, like, addictions really started kicking in. When I'm, like, left to my own devices and I can really do whatever I want. And there's, like, no even pretense of, like, parental control. Because I thought I could do it all. Like, you know, I was taking Adderall to study for tests and, like, doing good on the test. I'm a smart guy. I can do this. Like, and then partying and then just, like, having fun. And I like had this, like, path laid out for me. I'm like, this is going to be awesome. Like, right. I'm like on my own doing it, like smoking weed, like selling weed. Like, I got this. And then, man, I was smoking weed in the dorms. And then, dude, I was such a,
in the dorms. That's the problem.
Yeah. Such a naive kid. I thought, like, oh, you just have to, and, like, I built this whole,
blow,
like,
alcove,
like, in my door, so you couldn't see in my room.
No, I could smell it.
So it's like obviously I'm trying to hide something, and all the RAs were like, obviously this kid's trying to hide something. And so, like, when some other kids were smoking in the dorm, like, they're like, well, obviously this kid's smoking in the dorm because he, like, built this alcove inside his room.
Let's around search his your door. Room. Let's just search.
Yeah, and dude, no, and I wasn't smoking in my room, but I was stoned as shit and I was sleeping. So they're knocking on the door and I'm not answering. So it's not the RAs that answer the door. It's, like, campus security and, you know, the cops, because they've been knocking for hours and I'm asleep and I'm, like, in my boxers. And then I finally, like, they keep knocking, I finally answer the door, and
that's,
it's like,
the wrong move,
yeah, right there. That's the wrong move. And then it's security, and then they find a gram of weed and a bong, and it's like, Drexel's like, no, like, you're out, like,
you're out. They didn't even give you, like, that's crazy, dude. Yeah. At Frostburg, I just got a slap on the wrist. Like,
and I think I might have, too, if I had answered the door the first time. But, like, because it was, like, I didn't, then campus security had to be called. It was, like, okay, now we're going to, like, escalate this.
Mm-hmm. That's crazy.
Yeah, and so that was kind of the first setback that I took really personally, and I got really angry at other, at society and other people for my actions, right? Mm-hmm. You know, and an excuse, a rationalization to blame someone else for something that I did to myself. Mm-hmm. So I got, and it's not kicked out, they suspended me for 3 semesters. Okay. So I go home.
For 3?
They have 4 semesters a year.
So they do quarterly? Okay.
Yeah. So, yeah. I got kicked out for the rest of the year, had to come back and do like a do-over, right? And this time I'm not living in the dorms. And when I went back, it was just like, I think I got a, it was just like, oh, I'm free and just for your first time, I don't have to go to school. Like, mm-hmm. I get like a stupid job at like Taco Bell. It's just about like getting drunk, going to parties, smoking weed, like having fun. Like, you know, wake up when you got to wake up, do whatever you got to do, like coke, whatever, you know, just like
make it through the day.
Exactly. Just make it through the day and try to have some fun and make some money. And,
that should be the title of your episode.
Yeah. And so this kind of starts a theme in my story of a golden parachute, right? Yeah. Like, I would always like do my own thing until like some handcuffs came. Mm-hmm. And then my parents were like, all right, here's your lawyer. Like, and when I like to share about how this is, and I've heard this in the rooms, is like my parents were loving me to death, right? Mm-hmm. Like they were preventing me from experiencing the appropriate consequences at the appropriate time for me to like have the appropriate motivation to want to change.
Mm-hmm.
And so I would get a lot of slaps on the wrists. Before I even went to college, I got arrested for pot twice. You know, PBJs, right? Go to drug, like some silly drug class and mm-hmm. listen to some dude talk about how he used to drink. And like, I don't even drink that much. Like, I just smoke weed. And totally like comparing out and just like using a Wizinator, not even like not doing drugs.
Yep.
Just like, I'm just going to do what I want. And then the handcuffs come and then the parents bail me out. And same thing with going to college, right? I get caught smoking weed, and that's not my fault. It's just a gram of weed. Like, I didn't do anything that bad. I'm not doing anything that everyone else isn't doing. Mm-hmm. That's always was my excuse. Gram. Yeah. I'm not doing anything that all the other kids aren't doing. So I come back home, just party pretty much, work a stupid job, stay up all night, do whatever I want, and then go back, right? But it's not the same because I'm not in the dorms. Mm-hmm. And I had to get an apartment off campus. And this is like where I get to learn a little bit about myself. How, man, I'm still a little kid. Because, like, and I don't know how to live. Like, I just didn't know how to live. Because all I had to do, and I was letting, and anxiety still controlled my life. And the drugs weren't making it better at that point either. Because all I had to do was, like, go down and, like, get my gas turned on for my apartment. And I would have had heat. Right? I lived there a whole year without heat. and it's just like, dude, finding like ways and means. I would just like sleep on my friends' couches, right? Mm-hmm. And that was like my ways and means to like avoid responsibilities and mm-hmm. and living life. And I had found a girlfriend at some point during all of this. And you know, she was still in high school, and I was like 2 or 3 years older than her.
Okay.
So this was like me redoing my first year. I lose my phone.
Wait, was the girl in PA?
No, she was back home. So it was like a long distance relationship, but you know, it's only like a two hour train ride. I would come back a decent amount of time. And this is another pivotal point, right? Was like learning about myself and relationships and how unmanageable that shit can get. And what I learned from that relationship was like, I didn't know how to be in a relationship. I was all about me, right? Because I lose my phone. I'm in this relationship. I lose my phone. So I'm not calling her. my excuses for this are A,
you don't have a phone.
I don't have my cell phone. B, like I get to a payphone, it's like I'm either down on campus, I can get to a payphone. She's in high school, she's in class. Mm-hmm. Like, what am I going to do? She can't answer her cell phone when she's in class. Yeah. And then I'm back off campus at my apartment. It's like, oh, I don't have a phone. Like, like what am I going to like? I don't have a phone. Yeah. Like, how am I going to call her?
You guys could use AIM.
Yeah. Well, could have.
I'm thinking of the time frame. You know?
Yeah, for sure. Definitely could have, because I was around.
Her busy message is up. God damn it. Fuck.
But, why isn't she answering to Jimmy Neutron?
Do you remember your AOL
incident? It was Jimmy Neutron 420.
I hate you.
Jimmy Neutron.
I remember mine too, and I'm not going to say
it. I don't know why it was Jimmy Neutron. I didn't even watch that show. Just Jimmy Neutron. Mm-hmm.
And kicking people off, using hacks and stuff.
Oh, yeah.
Those were the days. So
there's gonna be some young kid on here who listens to this and like, what the fuck is AIM?
AIM? Never heard of AIM.
Anyway, move on.
Yeah, moving on. and it was finals my first semester, so I'm just like down at the library cramming until like 6 or 7 o'clock at night. And
I'm agreeing as if I had this experience, which I didn't. I was a gutter dweller.
So she's, I'm like, she'll understand. Like, as soon as finals are over, I'm going home for a week. Well, I'll explain it all to her.
She understand. She's in high school. Why would she understand, dude?
Exactly. Like, I learned the importance of maintaining contact with your partner and what it means to be in a relationship. Well, I didn't learn it then.
That's a thing.
Yeah. Oh, right. Write that down. So, you know, I get back and like she tries to express to me her opinion. She's like, I thought you were cheating on me. I thought you were in jail. And I'm like, I was just studying. Like, you're crazy.
Right? I was just studying.
Like, and all these excuses, but it's like my inability to have empathy for what her and what she was going through.
What a great excuse to throw back.
But it sounds complete bullshit.
Yeah.
I was just studying, babe.
Yeah, I couldn't call you. I was just studying. I was so busy. Like, you understand the stress I was under is finals.
Yeah. And I mean, look, Drexel is like a 10-week, you have a 10-week semesters, and you're doing like physics and chemistry and calculus.
See, that's really stressful doing a quarterly. That's like...
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah, I can't even imagine.
And that was kind of like, and I was really in love with her, right? This was like the person that like, you know, it was like the sex was good and like, you know, we loved to smoke weed together. It was like,
match made.
I had this illusion of I was in love with her when the reality, when I look back, it was like, oh, did you ever like do anything for her or like go to her events or give a shit about anything she was interested in? The answer is like, no, we just like smoke weed together and fuck. It's like,
I don't know, it doesn't sound that bad.
What? yeah, no, and like to like bitch about the world to each other. Or at least I like to bitch around the world to her. And
so you guys both dislike the same things.
What's that?
You guys both dislike the same things.
Yeah, we thought America was bullshit and you know, 9/11.
Come together with hate.
Yeah, yeah. And 9/11 was an inside job. And
oh, that was Dick Cheney trying to get over one on the government. You know, it's all about fear.
This is about to derail real quick.
Have you seen V for Vendetta?
And like, look at all this fake patriotism. Yeah. Like, these people really don't care about America.
That stupid Lee Greenwood song they play before every fucking home game.
I'm really not trying to dive down this rabbit hole. Keep it moving.
Wait, one thing. Lee Greenwood, that song is bullshit. And I will stand by that.
Which one?
Forever.
What?
You don't know Lee Greenwood's song?
Is that Proud to Be an American?
Proud to be an American.
Where he actually performed at a Ravens game. And
I know. It was awful.
It was so bad.
I was there. It was terrible.
It was so bad. Anyway. Okay.
Yeah. No.
Go ahead. Sorry.
Keep derailing it. It's all good. I could go down that rabbit hole, but
yes, that's a different podcast.
I mean,
though.
That's like a fourth.
We'll get you back for that one.
That's a part of a fourth step, right? For me,
yeah.
That's something that my sponsor he talked about that too, like having resentments towards like you know institutions.
Oh yeah,
is Martin your sponsor?
Yeah.
Oh okay. Yeah.
And long story short, she ended up breaking up with me, and I was like, and I took it really personally, and was very heartbroken. And that's when I stopped caring so much about school and started caring more about like selling pot and like going to the casino and playing poker and like getting fucked up. And it was like, I didn't know that I was like self-medicating at the time. I just thought it was like, I just didn't know how to live life. I found myself in a situation where it was like life was unmanageable, right? Like I was enrolled in college. I would start off like, yeah, I'm gonna do it. I would go to classes for like 2 weeks, and then it was like, all right, I just stopped going to classes. Mm-hmm. And then it's like withdrawal right before you get a zero, like you get an F in the class. And so you spend all the money for the class. You go to zero of the class and you get no credit and you just do it all over again. You know,
so how many W's did you have?
How many W's? I don't know, a lot. Like it was a couple semesters. That's a lot
of money, man.
Oh, that's dude. That's
a lot of money.
Probably at least like 40 grand. Jesus Christ. Like of my parents' money.
All right, let's fast forward through college.
just because I couldn't like get honest, right? Yeah. I couldn't get honest. Like, I don't really want to go to college. Yeah. Like, you know, I couldn't get honest.
Well, you can't say that though, because I've said that and like it was just like, you're going to college.
Yeah.
Like, get in the fucking order.
Right.
And like get your degree, motherfucker.
Exactly. And like that's actually part of my amends. It's like I have a degree now. And like I kind of got the degree for me, but it was more for like, man, because I could care less. Not even appearances, like for my mom. Right?
Yeah,
because when I brought that home, she cried. Right, like I got a degree. Like she was so happy. She framed it and everything, and I'm like,
"Where's this your really framed doesn't degree? Mean much." Where like, is your framed degree?
My framed degree. It's in a box. It used to be in my office.
So I put mine in my parents' closet at their beach house.
Okay,
so that's where it lives, at their house.
Fair enough.
I don't have one, so I feel shitty right now.
You can still get one, David. It's not too late.
No, it is way too late.
No, it's not. You're only 36.
Dude, no. No. I have a child now. It's too expensive. It's not too late.
Too late. We're never too late. Never too late. I could give you a very...
If I win the Mega Millions, I will get... if I win the fucking Mega Millions, I'll be a goddamn doctor, and you will call me doctor for the rest of my fucking life.
I don't call anyone doctor, but I don't believe in stupid little, like, fucking letters before or after your name. You can get a degree. I was an advisor. I can help you if you want it. Go ahead.
Absolutely. I mean, I started getting my degree at 34.
This isn't about me. This is about 34.
Look at this guy over here, David. Do you hear all those W's he had? Now he has a degree.
Yeah, in an associate's degree, but I have like 150 credits. It's kind of
so crazy. He could get a bachelor's and a little more.
Yeah. Yeah, so and that was the start of it, right? Like emotional pain, using drugs and alcohol to cover for emotional pain. And if I look back, that's kind of like the progression of almost all of my drug using. Like I didn't start using drugs until after I like was out of my first relationship. Like I found this girl when we were like I was a junior, she was a freshman, and we were in love and losing your virginity to each other, and then it's like, and then that ends, and you're like just heartbroken. Just I need to get fucked up, yeah. And then I'm 17. I've never smoked. I've drank a little bit, but once or twice. And this is kind of a sign that you might be an addict. If the first time you drink, you get alcohol poisoning, like that might be a sign that you're.
Usually, you don't like drinking the first time you drink. You're like, it's kind of hard to get it down because it tastes like shit.
Oh yeah, no, I just chugged vodka. Until
that's bad news bears, yeah. Man.
And then I'm like, oh, this is what I don't feel anything. And then it's like, oh, I feel
everything. I'm going to die.
I can't stand up. Like, why can't I stand up? And so that was literally the first time I got fucked up, was like at the end of a relationship. And then this next relationship ends. You know, I heard Shia LaBeouf say this when he shared on different podcasts, like, shoot, they were the one. Whoever I was with, that was the one. There was no two, there was no three. It's like, this is the one. Like, this is going to make everything better. Like, this girl, this relationship.
I'm so glad you made a Shia LaBeouf reference.
Yeah.
You know your audience.
Yeah. And it was like, dude, that's how I felt, man. It was like whoever I was with, that was the one, and we're going to make it work no matter how dysfunctional, no matter how shitty I was.
I was like that with a drug, though. Yeah. I was like, this is the one. Like, this is the line. This is the fucking eighth of shrooms. I'm like, this is the best.
This is going to change my life.
It's great.
And eventually it did.
Well,
it
the shrooms did change my life.
It did shift to it would shift to that, right? Because the drugs were the thing that helped me deal with the relationship pain, the emotional pain. And, yeah, and so that relationship's then right back in it, right? I really just didn't know who I was. I was a lost kid, right? Trying to like live up to my parental expectation, that's not really knowing who I was.
I was a lost kid.
I was a lost kid, dude.
And I went to Neverland and met Peter Pan.
Jesus. I mean, dude, getting the engineering degree, I remember my dad coming up, he's like, man, I'm building stuff, being an architect, that you should do that because you're smart, right?
What type of engineering degree do you have?
Oh, I don't have an engineering degree. I never got that far. Okay. Never made it that far, but that's why I went to engineering school, right? Because I got really good SAT scores, and I got into an engineering college. And I kind of like, and look, like now I'm finding out, oh yeah, I do like to build things. So it is, I definitely like Legos and blocks and shit when I was a kid. But it's the emotional pain from relationships that really drove me to like dive into using, because I'm lost and I don't know who I am. And if I don't, because I would always identify as my relationship. Like that was like my identification was like, oh, I'm like with this person. That's who I am. If they love me, I can love me. Right.
Yeah.
And that was that's something that I had to learn that like, oh, that's not how healthy relationships work. You know, that's codependency. And from there, it was kind of like off to the races. You know, I was like 22, 23, you know, from there until I got clean at like 33, it was just like a series of like kind of trying to do better, kind of not giving a shit, just doing drugs. Mm-hmm. Just on this exploration of what's like makes me happy. Drugs made me happy, so I'll just do as much of that as I can. Mm-hmm. And you know, in and out of like dealing with consequences, not dealing with consequences, like shipping weed across the country, like driving to California, trimming, like going to music festivals, getting arrested.
That's like 20 grand for like a couple of months. I don't blame you.
Oh yeah, no, I mean, I was good at spending it though.
It's good cash.
I'm sure.
Yeah, I was very good at spending it. And then whenever the consequences would come, right? So I'm like living this like kind of like pseudo drug dealer lifestyle. And then I go to a festival and I sell an undercover cop some ecstasy pills. And then it's
dude.
And you're in Illinois too, where it's like, dude, they don't fuck around.
What festival are you in Southern Illinois?
That was another one of our episodes.
Yeah.
It was Emily P. She got arrested for selling an undercover meth.
That sounds so predictable for Emily P.
Yeah.
Poor girl.
And and then some consequences show up. I actually like get some handcuffs and have to like sit in jail for a little bit, right? Mm-hmm. Like, and it's like
ecstasy, yeah.
Yeah. In the Bible Belt in Maryland, it's like PBJ. Don't be an idiot.
Yeah.
Right. Like in
test Illinois. Your drugs, sir.
Oh, it was in Indiana.
Illinois.
Were you in Southern Illinois too?
Like Peoria, yeah.
Oh, so you're not in Chicago.
No.
You're like in the middle of fucking bumfuck.
Yeah, it was. I used to like. I was getting into jam bands at that point in my life.
Who were
like
you touring with?
Mo was
Mo. Mo was you were touring with? Band. Yeah.
All
right. I love that I know like all this stuff still.
Yeah. I hate you. God damn
it. Anyway. I had so many friends like you.
Yeah. That's who we went to college with.
Yeah.
It's definitely a college bro, for sure. But without the degree.
Well, you had to follow Mo, dude. I get it.
Yeah.
And
it's funny because that was like the first festival where like, I'm going to be like a festy kid. I'm just going to go to festivals.
I'm going to sell bagels and drugs. And like, dude, I'm just going to keep following Mo. I had a bunch of friends who followed Yonder.
Yeah. Oh, that was like my second or third.
Yeah.
Yeah. I went to like Electric Force and stuff. I loved Yonder.
I just went to Electric. They love Electric Force.
Yeah. And this was the first festival. And like, boom, just like handcuffs.
That sucks.
Yeah. Well, it's awesome, dude. It's fucking awesome.
Looking back, it's great.
Yes. Yeah. No, it's awesome. Like these cops saved my life from probably being a heroin addict, or like legit.
You could have joined the nitrous mafia.
Yeah, you know? No, I was, dude, I had a tank of nitrous at that festival for sure. Like, I could have joined the nitrous mafia.
They're a real thing, man. They're not to be trifled with.
I don't.
Do you not know about them?
Yeah.
It's not that I don't know about it. It's that I don't want to know.
No. Okay. I am always fascinated by it.
Yeah, no, I mean, literally at that festival, I had a tank of nitrous.
Did you even get that?
In Philadelphia, like, yeah, you can just buy
it. In Philadelphia, you just go down to Kensington. Like, they have the thing.
It's fucking Philly. Yeah.
No, it's definitely a thing. That's where the Nitrous Mafia is based out of in Philadelphia.
Oh, okay.
So, yeah, had a tank, had, you know, 50 ecstasy pills, had, like, just, like, ready to, like, live that lifestyle, right? Not even... And I was so naive, so lost and so naive. I didn't even know what I was doing, right? Like, because I'd been... Yeah, it wasn't like I was doing it out of necessity. I was doing it because I wanted to be cool and I wanted to fit in, which is, like, all the wrong reasons to do anything. Mm-hmm. And that's recipe for disaster. So, thank God he intervened in my life and put me in some handcuffs to prevent me from, like... becoming the dirty hippie that I wanted to be.
Aspired towards.
And that was that definitely redirected me. And it kept me clean for a little bit too, actually. Because, you know, there's like no drug court. You don't go to drug court there. It's like the prosecution's like, well, how about 3 years? And you're like, fuck.
3 years of prison?
3 years of jail, yeah. Mm-hmm. And you're like, and I started crying.
Yeah.
Like, I just started crying. Because I'm like, dude, my only record is, like, PBJs for pot. And it's like, now I'm like, dude, 3 years in jail? Mm-hmm. Like, don't you know my white privilege? Like, yeah. Goddamn. Don't you know my white privilege? But they don't give a shit about that in Illinois, thank God. And, but my parents still bailed me out, right? They literally bailed me out.
Yeah.
Actually, no, that was...
They got you the lawyer.
They didn't bail me out. The people I was with, man, God bless their souls. They sold my tank of nitrous for me. They got together all the cash they could, and they bailed me out. Fucking
hippies. They are the hippies, best hippies on earth.
Hippies are decent people.
Yes.
Right? Angels. So they are usually...
They're just stinky.
They will help you. They're not junkies.
No.
Junkies would elect you to fucking...
Oh, you're fucking rotten.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
You're lucky you were hanging out with hippies.
Anyway.
Yeah. Yeah, this man, I really like the girl I was with. I don't even know her name anymore, but she like dipped into
Sage.
She dipped into her savings.
She's in your brain though, like she's
literally, yeah, forever. She literally like dipped into her savings because we got arrested. Me and her got arrested together. She was selling weed. I was selling ecstasy. They just let her go. They were like, eh, get out of here. And she dipped into her savings to like bail me out. You know that because they managed to raise like a grand or two, and then she used the rest of her money.
So there are good people in the world, essentially. Yeah.
And, you know, my parents paid her back. Like, you know, they bailed me out, right?
Dude,
and it's such a racket, right? Like, because...
Oh, you mean the jail, the prison system?
Oh, yeah,
the dude, fact that they like, said 3 years?
Yeah.
Like, that's bullshit.
And so, really, it's just an extortion racket. Like, if you're poor, you're going to...
Yeah, that is an extortion racket.
If you're poor, you're going to sit in jail for 3 years.
Yeah.
If you can afford to spend $5,000 for a dude who's going to introduce you to a lawyer that you're going to spend $5,000 on...
Now that county has an extra $5,000 in their pocket.
No, $10,000. Because you spend $5,000 for the guy who introduces you to the lawyer who you spend $5,000 on.
Yeah.
And then it's like, okay. And then the lawyer's like... Da da da. Whatever. I'll buy you lunch. And then,
I don't like that they went with 3 years, just like off the bat to you too, though. Right? Like, because they're not giving you a
mandatory
chance.
Mandatory minimums.
I know, but they're not giving him a chance to like rehabilitate. They're just going, all right, go to jail.
Yeah. Well, I mean, dude, this is the kind of town. Like, because I did have to do some time. I ended up doing. I got sentenced to 60 days. That was the plea deal I took was 60 days.
But that's bullshit. You took a plea deal. That's what I'm saying. It all comes down to the plea deal.
It's I mean, like, dude, I got caught red-handed. It's not like I didn't have drugs. It's not like I wasn't selling drugs.
There's just a bigger issue, I think, with like.
Oh sure,
that
no.
It didn't go
that's
to
a
court.
That's a whole separate podcast.
It's been pissing me off for a while. So when you said plea deal, I'm just like, argh!
No, I mean, I'm definitely like a fan of the Portugal model. I think drugs.
I don't know the Portugal model.
I think drugs should be decriminalized.
Oh no, I know that model. Yeah,
and
course.
we should focus all the money we're spending
on rehabilitation,
prosecuting people. We should spend it on rehabilitating, helping people.
Anyway, bailed out. Sorry,
bailed out. But I still ended up doing 60 days in jail. And that kept me straight for a while, right? Like, because that was those. I didn't do 60 days because I did good behavior, didn't get any fights, so I got 30 days. That actually, like, that was the first time I hadn't been high for 30 days as an adult, like, ever. It's like, oh, I've been daily using for so long. It's like, you get a little bit of clarity, you start dreaming again, like, realizing I'm 27 and I'm like, still have. Like, my ex-girlfriend from, like, 5 years ago is still showing up in my dreams. And I'm like, I still have, like, issues to solve. And journaling and reading and doing 300 push-ups a day. It's like, and trying not to get my ass kicked for being ignorant. You know, playing cards and calling someone a bitch. I'm like, bitches. And it's like, oh, no, you don't say that. No,
you do not.
No.
That's the second time you've mentioned cards. Are you a gambler?
Yeah, I was definitely a poker player. But I mean, in jail, it's just spades, right?
Yeah. Oh, you're playing in... Okay, I don't know what you mean when you said bitches. I was like, are you in the casino saying bitches?
No, when I was in jail playing... bitches. You don't say bitches in jail.
No. Spades is fun, though.
That's yeah, it was fun. And like, it was like playing with... I thought I was playing with my friends. And like, you know, you're like, bitches, gotcha. And it's like... Nope. And then the card game is over and it's like, this guy's like, look, I gotta kick your ass. And I'm like, dude, I don't want to fight. It's like, you know, I didn't mean it like that. It's like, then we go into my cell. He's like, look, I can't let you go, like, with calling me a bitch. Like, you gotta give me like juice for a week. And I'm like, sure, whatever. Like,
juice, your juice from your
meal.
Oh,
from
your actual meal. Juice. Okay. Yeah.
It's like, look, it's like,
I'm just asking.
But I mean, look, this is Peoria, Illinois. Like, I'm in jail with people who's like
Chicago people.
Yeah, like a lot of drug dealers in Chicago live outside of Chicago and like Peoria. So it's like a lot of like crack dealers, like but all my cellmates were crack dealers. Doing time for driving without a license, right? Because they can't get you for dealing crack because they're like slick, but they can get you for driving without a license, and they'll put you in jail in Peoria, Illinois. If you're black and driving without a license, you're going to jail.
Shut up, Eric.
it upsets me, man.
I know.
You know.
And that was a good wake up call for me, right? It was like what I needed at the time to kind of like divert me from a very dangerous life. Because look, there's two paths you can go. I think addiction can lead you towards like depression, isolation, and suicide, or it can lead you to just like this lifestyle of just like unmanageability that will like kill you. Mm-hmm. Two ways, like push you till you're alone, or like make you fucking live just craziness. And so I kind of got pushed towards the latter in that instance. It stopped me from using for a little bit, gave me a little bit of clarity. You know, I was always kind of like, oh, I'm going to try this time, stop using, go back to school. I think that time was like, get my botany degree, get like two or three classes away from getting the botany degree. Like, fuck it.
Start selling weed in Cali. Yeah. And like, dude, life's going to be fucking awesome.
So how'd you finally come to NA?
Good question. So I finally came to NA. So I'd gone through this cycle of like being law and another relationship shows up. That ends because I don't know how to be in a relationship still. And I find like a spiritual community. So it wasn't NA. Mm-hmm. But people who are like teaching me about some of the things that we talk about in NA, right? Like personal responsibility, mm-hmm. meditation, you know, tools of discovery. Because I think a lot of the steps are about who are you, right? Let's find out who you are. Mm-hmm. And you know, they have this spiritual community I became a part of, definitely had different tools, like a lot of affirmations, identity statement, which is basically you write everything negative you think about yourself, and then you just write the opposite, and then you read that, you know? And that's something, a practice I've been doing for years now, every day, right? I have an identity statement that I read every day. So I get introduced to this spiritual community. They give me some tools, like meditation, like service. Like, I'm learning some of the spiritual principles that NA teaches us. Mm-hmm. And But then I'm like, man, it's like I'm doing good. And then, fuck, it's like I still don't have a lot of self-worth. I still feel like a piece of shit. I haven't dealt with any of my childhood shit.
Yep.
Like, I'm just, like, doing yoga and, like, trying to meditate, and it's uncomfortable as shit. Mm-hmm. And, like, why am I not using, right? And so, like, why am I not smoking weed anymore? And so I just, like, abandoned the spiritual stuff back to just, like, all right, I'll figure this out on my own. And then I redid that cycle. Like, life got shitty. Like, I'm alone. Hey, I'm going to go back to the spiritual community. And they're like, all right, well, where you been? And it's like, well, I've been fucking doing drugs. And they're like, all right, well, chill out. Like, mm-hmm. you know, stay over there. And you show up long enough, you can come back in.
Yeah.
And eventually I got back into it. But then I get a job. And then I get depressed. And then I mm-hmm. stop going to the spiritual community because I'm just, like, depressed at my job. I'm a jeweler. I'm, you know, polishing stones. I like crystals.
Friends with Nick?
I do know Nick.
Yeah, okay.
And, just making sure. And fall back into depression. Quit that job because I'm start using drugs again. And then it's like the cycle continues until it got to the point where, like, I had come back to that spiritual community and left and come back and left. And then it was like it just got to the point where it was like I was just alone, right? Mm-hmm. And using, I quit my job. I'm alone. I'm using. Like, I just disconnected so much from everyone and everything. Like, you lose connections the slower I was diving into addiction and into self-centered fear. It was like at first, like, you have friends and drug dealers, and then you have some friends and drug dealers, and then you have drug dealers, and then, man, I didn't even have drug dealers anymore, right? Mm-hmm. Like, because all the drug dealers I knew had, like, stopped. Dude, we're too old for that shit.
Yeah.
Like, and so I resorted to the dark web, right? I'm a smart guy. I know how Bitcoin works, right? Let's, like, just get some.
Don't, Eric. Don't. Whoa. Keep going. Nope. Oh. Don't. Nope. Keep going.
Okay. I won't talk.
And the thing about illegal drugs is there's no FDA for illegal drugs.
There is
no.
No. They don't like, there's no, like, ingredients list. Like, this has this in it, nope. You know? And I kind of, once I went to jail, I was kind of like, oh, man, I really, as long as I stay away from the hard stuff, I'll be good, right?
So you're buying pressers on fucking the dark web? Yeah. Like,
no, so I was just into smoking oil, right? I didn't even get high anymore.
You bought oil on the dark web?
Shit ton.
You don't test it, you just smoked it.
Just smoked it.
Oh.
Yeah, retarded.
Dude.
And it was spiked with, like, everything, right? And I had been smoking so much oil for so long, and this stuff, I was just like,
what
oh,
was
man.
In your drug test, like, from that oil?
You, from that oil?
Yeah, what was in your drug test where you were just like, because I
pretty much everything
PCP,
but fentanyl. Everything, like, but fentanyl.
I had
much.
PCP in my last drug test.
Heroin.
I was smoking crack and doing heroin, and I was like, how the fuck did that PCP get in there? And I was like, that makes sense why I started, like, digging into my knee with a knife.
Yeah.
Jesus Christ.
That makes a lot more sense now.
No, it does. A lot of benzos and barbiturates.
Ooh.
Benzos.
So you were doing a lot of the research chemical benzos, probably.
No, I mean, I bought an ounce of this oil. And that's about a month. That was about a month supply for how much I was using. So
just a little bit of lewds and, you know, some.
But pretty much my life had gotten to the point where it was just like, wake up to smoke enough. Whatever I could find to I could go to sleep again, right? That was my life. It had been that, and it was like a progressive thing for like months of just like trying to get fucked up enough so I could go to sleep mm-hmm. and try not to wake up.
Mm-hmm.
And then it was like, you know, I'm all right, back in the cycle. All right, my life sucks. I got to do better. I'm gonna start reaching out to like that spiritual community again mm-hmm. and like get my shit together. You know, I need to do something with my life. I thought I was 32. I was 33. I lost a whole year. Yeah, right. It's just such a haze. I'm living at home with my parents. I'm a piece of shit. Like, I need to like do something with my life. Managed to get like 20 or 30 grand from like some savings bond that like my grandpa had put in like a freaking.
Oh, you had mitzvah money, didn't you?
No, this wasn't mitzvah money. This was just like.
You'd already burned through the mitzvah money.
I was like 16 going to Israel stuff.
Okay. So you didn't get the chance to blow it on drugs?
No, no. Okay. But that was the first place I got drunk was in Israel.
So maybe you did.
But where was I?
Money.
I got a little bit of money and I'm like, I need to like, I care about how I look. Man, I can't even look at myself. I suck. Like, mm-hmm. I need to like do something. So when people ask me what I do, like, I'm not like, I'm a piece of shit. Like, you know? Mm-hmm. And so I was like, all right. I started to get more active, got into electric skateboards, and was like, all right, I'm just going to like start an electric skateboard company, right? Like, how hard can it be? I'll just learn all the shit. Huh. It's like selling weed. Just got to find the right supplier, make my markup, good to go. It's not like selling weed at all. Yeah. Like, there's this shit called taxes and like...
There's a supply chain.
Yeah, and then you're compete, and there's like actual competition and like... So anyway, long story short, I'm like, all right, I got to get my life together. And I can tell people I own my own electric skateboard company. And like, yeah, I just got to get it together. And I'm like, all right, I've quit smoking before. I'm just gonna stop. Except I wasn't just smoking weed anymore, right?
No.
I had been for a month.
You could like die, over a month. Dude, if there are benzos in there. You could legitimately die.
Yeah. So if you've ever detoxed off benzos before, yeah. There's a lot of psychosis involved.
There's seizures, too.
And manic. Yeah, no, I did all that. And that was my path to NA, right?
Mm-hmm.
Was like quitting everything, and you just drop into this manic state. You don't even feel manic; you just feel productive. Mm-hmm. You're like, I'm getting so much shit done. Yeah. Like, this is great. I need to do this. Get my life back in order. And really, like, I'm in this like manic crazy state, and then I just like I hit this like. This bottom, this like realization of like, oh, I treat people like a real piece of shit. Mm-hmm. I'm a real piece of shit. And I got to go apologize. And so some of the people in my life who introduced me to the rooms were like this cleaning lady my family had hired. You know, she's, me and her were like weed smoking buddies. You know, she'd worked for us for my parents. Yeah, she worked for my parents for like 20 years. She wasn't just a cleaning lady, right? She was just like this really like motherly type to me. And really like loving, caring, and I would hook her up with like good weed and for a good price, and you know, we were like friends. Yeah. And her husband was an alcoholic, and they had both gotten clean. And so these are people in my life that I cared about that I'm like, man, I just like treat these people like shit. Like, and so I go over to their house and I'm like, I am such a piece of shit. I'm so sorry. I'm mm-hmm. like crying, bawling my eyes out, manic as shit on their couch. And the Rick was like, all right, dude, you're trying to do your ninth step right now and you're on your first.
You're trying to do your ninth step right now.
And I know where you're at. Whatever you do, don't listen to your head. Right, and I'm like, check. I'm just gonna listen to my head, and I like leave there, and I'm in like a psychosis state, right? And just all of these like, I wouldn't derogatorily call it a psychosis state because there was a lot of truth. I learned a lot of lessons from this experience of just I was just the truth of who I was being revealed to me,
mm-hmm.
and it was like it was too much to bear. Like, I'm kind of a piece of shit. Like, I treat people like shit. Like, I'm selfish. I'm self-centered. And I don't want to be this way anymore, right? Mm-hmm. And it's like, oh, man, I care more about things than people. Like, yeah. That was, you know, and I had all of these things on me. And I just leave there and I'm like, you know, I'm having these, like, epiphany. Like, it was a spiritual experience, right? Like, I need to, like... let go of my materialism mm-hmm. and like open up to like, you know, being like an actual like spiritual person who actually cares about people and isn't this like bullshit hippie who says like all this shit and then just like fucking goes home and does drugs. Mm-hmm. Like, let me tell you how to live your life. And then like just does nothing but play video games and do drugs.
Mm-hmm.
And so here's the thing. There's two wolves inside of me. I mean, if you've heard the story, it's like, which wolf do you feed? I've been feeding that dark wolf or the whatever, the self-destructive wolf for so long that, like, when an idea comes into my head, like, the things you own you, which is a truth, right? Like, the wolf that took over when that idea came into my head wasn't, like, the good wolf. It was, like, the other wolf. And so it's like, all right, I just need to, like, give all my shit away right now. Like, and I took it very literally in a very crazy manic state. And so I just, like, parked my car at, like, the local high school, just started walking. And, you know, there's no I don't believe in coincidences. And so literally while I'm walking, I have all of my most prized possessions with me. This skateboard that I really, like, just got, and I really love it, and this backpack that had been to all the festivals, like, sold all, like a part, like, this, these material things I was, that I was attached to, I had all of them, like, necklaces that I had gotten, you know, like, really, like, sentimental and meaningful things, I had all of them, my fire toys from Spinning Fire, like, oh, like,
spun fire.
Yeah, you know,
you were in it, dude.
Ego, I was in it. I really wanted to go to, like, Burning Man, you know, all that stuff. And I had all of it with me. And I just start walking in this, like, crazy manic state. And that idea comes in. The things you own end up owning you. I need to let it all go. And so I literally just start, like, all right. I'm like, because I'm literally, like, going through almost, like, a anxiety panic attack. I just, like, describe it as, like, a battery, you know, that had too much voltage, right? Like, I'd been down regulating my voltage in my body, because our batteries are basically batteries, for so long. My body had compensated to keep me alive, and I had stopped using the drug that down regulated my voltage, and so my body's just used to amping me up where I'm, like, dangerously overvolted, like, about to, like, out of existence. And and so I'm just walking around, like, all right, I need to let it all go. Like, just, like, leaving stuff, dropping the backpack, like, buy some kids' toys. You know, just, like, leaving the skateboard, buy some kids' toys. Oh, they'll find it. They need it more than I do. Yeah. Like, taking my wallet out and just throwing it in a mailbox. Like,
was it an electric skateboard?
No, oh, no, not at that point.
I got to give you a five-minute warning.
Okay, sure. So this is how I made it to NA. Was basically, I found myself at a point where, you know, I was at a bottom, right? Because that was a spiritual experience going into, I basically was just, like, walked into the woods, right? And given everything away until I literally had nothing. Like, no clothes, no nothing. Just found myself in the middle of the forest.
You were naked?
In December. In the middle of the night.
I love you, dude.
Yeah. And I had, my last two things were kind of like these two necklaces. One I was, like, a Native American turquoise beads that I had gotten through trade, like, had a lot of meaning to me. And the other was, like, a piece of jewelry I got from this world-renowned artist that was, like, expensive and meaningful. And I'm like, this shit don't matter, right? Life and living matters. And it's like, the world matters. And I was, like, in the middle of the forest, and I just, like, dug a hole, threw them in there, and was like, it's like my offering to, like, the universe. Like, I need to let this shit go. This shit doesn't matter. I just need to be of service, like, and that's a truism that I was aware of at the point, but I didn't realize how deep that can go until I started working some steps. What that really means to be of service to others and not yourself. Anonymous is a big word there. But I realized I needed help. And then a thought popped into my head. What would Jesus do? Like a nice Jewish boy.
What would Jesus do
in this situation? Because I was in a situation where I'm like, oh, I, like, just gave all my shit away. And I took that way too seriously and literally. And that was not the point of that thought. And I need to, like, get help.
Jesus and, would start a religion right now.
And, like, I was so manic that, like, there was no, like, backtracking, right? I could not, like, backtrack to find all my stuff because I was just manically walking and dropping things.
Did you find anything?
No, never.
No?
And so I just was like, well, he'd probably ask for help. And I had such a negative perspective of society. I was like, no one's going to help me. Like,
That's true.
And then it's cool. I'll just get out of here, right?
Yeah.
Go
people
die.
Are shit.
Yeah, people are shit. No one's going to help me.
The animals might, though, if you're in the woods.
Yeah. So I started walking out and, you know, fucking ran into a random person. Like, hey, can I get a ride home? And just, like, some fat naked dude. And he's like, just scared the shit out of this dude, right?
I bet.
Yeah. And then it was like, All right, well, if you're not going to help me, I need some help. I kind of need a ride home. I don't have anything right now. And like, so some truth started becoming evident to me, the importance of honesty. Like, and that was tough, man. Like, I just like gave all my shit away and like, I need help. Like, like getting honest in that moment. Like, cause I remember running into that first guy and I didn't want to like tell him how I got myself into this situation. Another spiritual principle, was like, taking responsibility. Like, oh dude, I can't blame anyone else. I did this to me. Like, there's no one else I can blame.
Yeah,
my responsibility. And and then I actually, some people, then the firefighters show up. They don't know what to do with me. Like, I'm like, you guys are gonna give me a ride home? They're like, hold on. I'm like,
all you're right. Going to the hospital, buddy.
I'm like, just gonna start jogging home. Yep. Like, and then the cops show up and they're like, are you guys gonna give me a ride home? They're like, whoa, sit down, buddy.
Yeah,
I'm like, okay. And then they gave me some like clothes.
Oh, that's nice of them.
Yeah, it was funny because man, the jacket they gave me. So they just give me some pants and a jacket, right? It was in the Lost and Found. It said, most improved student. And I was like, God has a sense of humor. Because I think we're all here to learn stuff. And, you know, I had a lot of improving to go. So anyway, that was how I found NA, right?
Mm-hmm.
First, I went to the fire station and did crisis response. Started going into seizures while I was there. Yeah. They like, you know, did the knock on my chest. I black out in the back of the ambulance. I start swinging on the medics. I end up punching one in the face. I don't remember any of that.
Mm-hmm.
I just remember being scared and knowing like, I feel like I'm gonna die. I need to get the fuck out of here. And like, and then I black out, wake up, being walked into a hospital. And then, you know, I just got honest, right? Totally honest. If you ask me a question, I'm going to tell you exactly. No filter, no discretion. And I knew at that point, like, for me to get through this, I need to be honest. And I just need to look for the good in people. Like, God is good. That was something that came into my head. And that was my early compass in recovery. It's like, God is good. So I'm just going to look for the good in people. And in the hospital, the nurses, I was like, these are good people. I can feel the caring and the goodness in them. Mm-hmm. So I'm going to take some suggestions from them. And they're like, you should do this PHP program. And I'm like, but I got to like start my business and like da 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 and all this crazy shit. And it's like, I'm like, wait a second. I always try to do it my way. Maybe I'll take some suggestions and I'm just going to go to this PHP program. And I just went every day. And then that PHP program's like, you know, we do this exercise where it's like, what's your normal day look like? And I'm like, oh, I just do drugs all day, every day. Like, and she was like, maybe you should go to NA. And I was like, nah, I think I'm good. I know what I'm doing now. I've learned all the stuff. I got it. And then I'm like, wait a second. That's me trying to do it my way again. Maybe I should take some suggestions.
What would Jesus do?
Yeah. And also it was like that spiritual community that I'd leaned on for so long was like, you know, he was very good. One of my teachers is very good at like making things kind of self-evident. It's like, well, if you know all the shit, you should get through it real quick. Why don't you go do it?
Like, why are you wasting our time, man?
Yeah. It's like, well, then it should be easy for you to do what you got to do, to go work some steps. If you already know it, go do it. And so I did. And then it was like taking the suggestions. And it was like, get a sponsor. It was like, oh, man, this feels like I'm asking a dude to marry me. And it was... And then I asked for some of his suggestions on how to get sponsored. And he's like, look for someone who doesn't deal with like bullshit and is old and crotchety and is like, won't deal with your bullshit. Martin wasn't my first sponsor.
That was Martin.
And then I found this guy, Rick, and he was like, you should do 90 meetings in 90 days. And I'm like,
take the
cut. My ego comes back in and it's like, mouse, whoa, son. I've got a car. I live at home. I don't have any bills. I don't know if I can do 90 meetings in 90 days. Like, that's a lot of responsibility. Like, it's a lot of responsibility and I don't think I can commit to that. That's
it
too
is a
much.
Lot, dude. I don't know.
And but that's the insanity. Like, I had nothing better to do than go to meetings. And but my disease is like, dude, really? And that was the muscle that I needed to learn, was the surrender, was the take some suggestions, keep coming back. Listen. Even though I had a lot to say, and I did say a lot, and I seeked I seek a lot of outside resources. You know, I had a wonderful therapist on my journey who listened to me talk about a lot of stuff that needed to be talked about so that I, you know, with our fourth and fifth step and just get connected, right? And try to pay shit forward. Because I realized I was so grateful for those psych nurses. I wanted to, like, and even that, like, firefighter that I punched in the face, like, I was so grateful that they, like, helped me and, like, literally saved my life. No, they did. They did charge me, for sure. Had to go to court, had to go to drug court, which was good because it made sure, because when I didn't feel like going to a meeting, I went to a fucking meeting.
That's outside accountability.
That's God.
Yeah. Well, carrots and sticks. I think we need them both. Try not to. Carrots and sticks. I think they work better together.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think so too.
And you can't do just one or just the other. I think they work better together, carrots and sticks. So and that's what got me to where I'm going. And then tuning that compass of following what's good, you know, found my sponsor. I was in AA, found my sponsor in NA, and you know, it's like, you know, I like sponsorship family get together stuff. Martin, why don't we do that? It's like, well, some people tried to do it, always falls apart, but hey, let's give it a shot. And now it's like,
and it's been great.
One of my favorite things.
I've had to miss the last few months just you know, life.
And And I have like a community and fellowship to be a part of. And I mean, yeah, I know I'm out of time, so I'm going to shut this
up. But we got some questions for you. Sure. Eric, you want to go first?
Me?
Okay, I'll go
first.
Sure,
I'll go first. Okay. So, Josh, what would Jesus do?
What would Jesus do? In that moment, it was he'd ask for help.
He'd ask for help. That'll be the first one. You can go. All right. I just wanted to know, what would Jesus do?
What would Jesus do? He would give you a sweet rubber bracelet.
He would help.
Do you not have one?
No, I do. Okay. I have several. So religion, you were obviously raised a good Jewish boy. Mm-hmm. It's a spiritual, not religious program. So 100%. Obviously. Yahweh's.
Don't they say that about Judaism too?
I don't know.
In parts of Judaism?
I don't know. I'm not Jewish. So,
Like how where you were raised, right? Like, I know you came from kind of that. I'm taking your question. I know you came from sort of
the fuck is this?
Holocaust. So there's probably a deep representation with that. But I've also shot enough mitzvahs to know that it is a spiritual program, not a religious program. Of like
the, so your religious upbringing and your spiritual path, how have you merged those in recovery?
That's a great question.
Yeah, I boiled it down to a fucking actual question.
You know, that's a great.
I just needed some staging.
That's a great question, because when I came throughout my life, I had developed a huge resentment towards religion, right? Like, and because I was very much skewed to look at the negatives of everything. I think that's a lot of active addiction, is looking at the world as and what's wrong with it instead of what's right. And where does that, you know what they say, optimists are successful, pessimists are right.
I agree with that.
And so recovery, about being successful in recovery, is about being an optimist. And so I was pessimistic about religion, right? I would look at the church and I'd be like, oh, well, like the Inquisition, you know, just everything, raping little boys, you know, like Spanish, I look at the government and I'd be like, whatever, like taxation without representation, like inflation, whatever. So with religion, I was very much just throw the baby out with the bathwater. And so spirituality and religion, when did they start? It's about how it's communication, it's language, right? Because spirituality has truths, and religions are an attempt to translate the truths. That's my opinion, right? And and I think that all religions are searching spiritual truth, searching for on our a pathway to find spiritual truth. And I've heard it said that you know, it's like digging for oil, it's like drilling for oil, right? All the oil rigs are different religions. They're all coring down to the same truth. But you just got to stick on one long enough to get to the, and keep digging to get to the cores, the truth.
That's a great analogy.
Yeah. That's actually from one of my friends who passed away from cancer, you know, not the disease of addiction.
It's a very good analogy, though.
That's fantastic.
So yeah, spiritual, but a little bit more on spirituality, because it's about the practice, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's of those spiritual principles that we mm-hmm. talk about in NA, and like meditation,
mm-hmm.
like be of service, forgiveness, and like learning what all of these words actually mean and how to practice them.
Oh yeah,
is, you know, is my spirituality. And and the cool thing is the more I've gotten in touch with my spirituality, the more comfortable I am around religion.
Mm-hmm.
Like I'm cool with what all the religions, like, because I know at all they are is an attempt to find what's true
mm-hmm.
for each individual. And like, dude, if you're on a path towards truth, like, I'm on your team.
Yep.
Right. And let's get there together. And how can I help? And maybe you don't need my help.
Mm-hmm.
So spirituality and religion, that's kind of my take.
All right. What do you got, Carly?
I got nothing.
You got nothing?
I got nothing. We're just lucky I showed up. I'm struggling over here. So I'm here. And that's the best question I can do today.
So I have a question.
Yeah.
Sure.
So upper middle class, right? Mm-hmm. I can relate. How?
No.
One thing that's difficult about recovery when you come from a certain upbringing is comparing, like, you compare it out. It's easy to compare out, mm-hmm. right? Like, it's pretty simple. You can do it, like, real quick if you come from a certain, like, background. What are the ways that you kind of keep yourself in, right? So, you, like, you've already got the drugs. Like, you've taken yourself down to the level that you need. But, like, how do you get over some of the socioeconomic differences that might present itself in a recovery, like, situation?
Yeah, that's a great question, because that's something I still struggle with and find challenging to this day, is because, man, all I know is my perspective, and for so long my perspective was like, yeah, I was like, I was economically blessed. But, like, dude, I knew plenty of other people that, like, had more than me.
Oh,
like,
well, of course. Yeah. Yeah.
Like, and, but really, what I'm finding, because it's still a search for me, because it still feels a little uncomfortable sometimes, because a lot of us come, what I found is, I can't speak to other people's experience, so I'll just stick to my own, is that it can be something that, like, I feel can get in the way of a relationship, is when someone's like, oh, well, you just don't
get it.
Yeah. And also, like, I don't get it, right?
Like, no, like, I don't get it.
Like, and I have to look at, I have to realize that, like, so if you make $30,000 a year in America, you're in the top 1%, right?
You said and how much?
$30,000 a year. You're in the world. You're in the top 1% in the world if you make 30%, like 30 or something like that.
I was like, not in the U.S.
$30,000 to $50,000, you're top 1% in the world, right? And so, like, oh, I'm like 0.1% of the world, right? So, like, that means there's like, if there was 10,000 people, there's like 9,900 that, like, have less than I was, like, just blessed with by nothing I've done. Like, I didn't earn it, right?
Yeah.
It was just given to me. And
it's a weird perspective to think worldly rather than just the U.S.
For sure. But and so I do have to realize that I come from some entitlement. And so there's some positives and negatives with that, right? Some negatives is like, I've never been to the point where, like, it's like, I have to do this because, like I have to, like, there's no money in the bank. I need food. Like, I've never been to that point. But also at the same time, I've, like, it can be a struggle to really develop discipline and willpower when you come from, you know, entitlement. Right.
Yeah.
Like, it's almost like you're, like, you know, well, if you're,
who the fuck are you to tell me what to do?
Yeah, exactly. Okay. Like, I don't, and dude, I had that view for a large personal, like, I don't have to have this job. Like, I could
do something else.
I could not work and make more than you. Like, right. Like, it's like, I don't have, I do, I would only do jobs that like were interesting to me. Like when I was a jeweler, it's because it was interesting to me. Mm-hmm. It's not because I needed the money to, and like, you know, look, I come from upper middle class, but not like super rich. So it's
you're
like,
not upper class. There's a difference.
No. And now I'm firmly like middle class. And like, if, if like I don't start earning for myself, like I'm gonna be like poor. Like I'm not gonna like leave money to my kids. Right.
You're not waiting for mom and dad's inheritance. No. You're not one of those people.
I mean, that will be there for sure. But is it, I'd rather have parents.
You'd rather have your money too, right? Like making it your own way.
Yeah, and also it's like I want to be able to like support a family someday.
Yeah.
And it's not like I can't, because like I have worked a lot in recovery to be at a point where I am hireable and I have a resume and I do things. Like I am a productive member of society, but what the like having money does is it gives me the opportunity to do things that I can. So I volunteer a lot, right? Yeah. And I don't. It's tough because, like, you want to be anonymous with that shit, like, right?
It's but, hard like, to be like, hey, I helped people today, but yeah. I'm not going to tell anyone about it because I'm a good person.
But, like, it gives me the opportunity to invest in things without looking for a monetary gain. Things that I feel are, like, in alignment with, like, my soul and my soul's purpose. But also, it can be something that, like, it can be difficult with newcomers sometimes, too, right? And like, and I always question myself, like you saw me drive up in a Tesla, like I am a dork. I really love technology. I got a good deal on it. I got it used. Like
I assumed that you had a good job because you had that Tesla.
Exactly. And it's,
I love you guys. We gotta
wrap
this up. Sorry. We can talk for a while. All
right. So David, last whatever.
All right. All right. Yeah. Well, thanks again. Thanks everybody for joining us. Josh.
Josh,
thank you very much. I will definitely have you back. We have a lot.
Yeah, we'll do a topic.
We have a lot more to talk about.
A topic episode.
Last quick minute, real quick. Talking to anybody out there struggling, what do you have to say to them?
Man, get out of your own way, right? I was my own biggest pitfall of my own recovery, right? Surrender. Just surrender, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like, look for the good in people. Look for kind-heartedness and follow that. And then try to copy what those people do. And you'll do just fine. So.
Fantastic. All right. Well, we would like to thank our guest, Josh, for joining us again. And here at Podcast Recovery, we are aiming to expand the scope of support for recovering addicts. Accessibility and convenience of helpful services is paramount to combating addiction. We work to bring the message of recovery to every addict, wherever and whenever it is needed. We believe that a powerful voice of recovery should be obtainable, practical, and at the touch of a button. Every addict deserves to hear a message of hope, and Podcast Recovery is here to provide it. All right, everybody, thanks for tuning in once again. Please go to all our social media outlets, Facebook, Instagram, Twitter/X. Like, share, subscribe.
We are now. Don't call it X.
I know. It's Twitter. We are now on Reddit and Discord, apparently, yes, which is super cool. Check us out on all your podcast outlets. But most importantly, everybody out there,
stay safe and stay clean. Thanks.